The clocks fell back an hour this Sunday, marking the end of daylight saving time. Love it or hate it, daylight saving time will continue to be a federal rule, meaning we'll lose the hour we just gained in the spring and get it back again later. The loss and gain of that hour is more than a logistical headache for many people. It can also have an impact on our health. Studies show that our cognitive function is impaired around the time change, and there can be higher rates of serious emergencies like heart attacks. Our next guest breaks down the health impacts of daylight saving time. Paul Martino is the chair and associate professor in the Department of Biology at Carthage College in Kenosha. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure.
Well, we just fell back an hour, so in my opinion, we gained an hour. But that might not be a good thing, this change of schedule. Why is that?
The problem is that when you throw off the circadian rhythms, the sleep cycle, it makes people groggy for different reasons. So even though we gained an hour, the body has this internal clock, and it likes the clock to be on time. And so when the clock is not on time, it senses that there's a problem, and people get groggy.
What kind of consequences can there be to doing this, say, a couple times a year?
So the falling back in the fall isn't as much of a problem, but so the consequences in the spring are greater because what the research shows is that there are a greater number of accidents, heart attacks, and some other bad things could happen because of a cognitive impairment in the spring. That doesn't seem to be quite the case in the fall.
In my head, it feels like just an hour. It doesn't seem like that big a deal, but our body's rhythm says, yeah, it is?
Yeah, the body's rhythm says, yeah, it is. So they have there are these clocks, the clock genes, and the master clock is in the brain in an area called the hypothalamus. It's called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And in addition to the major clock, there are additional clocks, and they're extremely sensitive to changes in time. For instance, when you fly from the West Coast to the East Coast, right? That's jet lag. And let's say you fly from Wisconsin, which is Central Time, to New York. You lose an hour, and you feel that hour when you lose it.
Is this a big enough worry to you? I know people have been arguing about daylight savings time for decades. Is this something where you think just solely because of the possible health concerns, we should revisit this idea and weigh these costs against whatever the benefits might be?
That's a tough question. I think it's something to consider. Like I said, the fall doesn't seem to be as big of an issue, but in the spring it does become bigger, and there is literature to support this, that we do have these unintended consequences. So it's probably something we should think about. Many other countries don't do this, and we don't see some of the same changes that occur in countries that do it. So it's at least something to have a conversation about.
We're talking about daylight savings time and our sleep patterns with Paul Martino, chair and associate professor in the Department of Biology at Carthage College in Kenosha. Paul, there's this nagging concern at the back of my head now. I often stay up later on the weekends and get up later on the weekends. I suspect I'm not the only American to do this. Are we voluntarily messing with our own sleep cycles in ways that it might be bad for us?
In fact, you are. The best option would be to go to sleep and wake up relatively around the same times. And the body seems to benefit from habits. And so when you start changing your sleep-wake cycle, you're essentially doing what happens during daylight savings time, and it's probably exacerbated compared to daylight savings times because we're not just doing it by an hour. We're probably looking at several hours. So, yeah, we're doing exactly what you said.
Do we, looking at this as a biologist, do we as, I'll just say Americans, I don't know what the rest of the world is doing, do we take our sleep seriously enough in the biology of our sleep?
I don't think we do. So if you look back in our own history, in the 1930s and 40s, average American was probably getting closer to 9 hours of sleep. And that's probably because we were more agrarian-based and light played a more important role, and we didn't have all of the technology that we have now. So I don't think we take it seriously enough. I think sleep is one of those things that, oftentimes you'll hear people say, I'll sleep when I die. And that's their attitude, because sleep is a secondary thing. But if you take a look at the consequences of lack of sleep on the immune system, on your gut biota, on your cognitive abilities, on your endocrine system, your hormonal system, right? All of those, including your metabolism, all of those function suboptimally when we don't get enough sleep, and that's probably between 7 to 9 hours a night.
That's all stuff that's affecting us in the short run. If I'm not sleeping on a good schedule or enough, I'm feeling it tomorrow or this week. Are there long-term cumulative impacts of not taking care of our sleep?
There actually are. And it's all of those things that I've mentioned are become cumulative. So in the metabolism, our ability to regulate blood glucose, the sugar that gives us energy, becomes severely impaired over time. And that's just from not sleeping. So the difference between someone who sleeps 8 hours a night and someone that sleeps 5 hours a night is statistically significant. And so if you magnify that 3 hour gap in sleep over a year or two, you can imagine the consequences of it, where someone could become diabetic.
As a biologist who's looking at sleep, what are some of the things we don't know? What are some of the frontiers you'd like to have more information about?
Sure. Some of the things we don't know about sleep is, you know, how exactly do we get better? So I like to think about sleep as a soft reboot for all of the systems, but we're not exactly sure how that works, right? We know that it does, because the data show it, but how does it happen? Is it happening in the brain? Does every organ system that has these clocks, these circadian clocks, get affected individually? So it'd be interesting to see if it's not just the major clock genes, but the more minor.
Wow. Okay. And scientists are researching these kind of things as we speak, I imagine.
They are. Yeah. They are. And so hopefully within the next 3 to 5 years, we'll have some of those answers.
Now, if I can ask a personal question, you're a biologist, you know this stuff all pretty well. Does that mean you keep up a pretty good sleep habit, or are you like the rest of us and kind of jump around?
I will be honest. I try to. I'm better over the last 5 years than I was when our children were younger. So I try to go to bed and sleep 7 to 8 hours a night and do that on the weekends too. But I'll be honest, it's really tough. And so there is evidence to show now that you can catch up on sleep on the weekends. So that's at least encouraging.
Knock on wood. And as we wrap up, let's go back to that clock change now. We're about a week out from it, just shy of a week out. Are there things we can do to help recover when we change the clock in the fall, and maybe especially when it comes up again in the spring?
Absolutely. So go to bed at your normal hour, number one. Number two, if you can be exposed to lots of sunlight early in the morning, 10 to 15 minutes, number two. Number three is try to do some kind of physical activity early in the morning. And number four, be patient, because unfortunately there are just some things that take time.
Paul, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Paul Martino is the chair and associate professor in the Department of Biology at Carthage College in Kenosha. He joins us to talk about the impact of daylight saving time on our health and about good sleep hygiene in general.